This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches and basketball people. We are back with the Talking Split Podcast this week. I am once again Rob Calder, as I am every week. With me, Zoe Carr in the same house.
Yes, I'm still Zoe Carr.
Zoe Carr. Yep. Excellent. Couldn't get out of this one, unfortunately. We are in one of our weeks of lockdown. All the days, weeks, and months have started to blend together. But we have called in a very special guest, newly employed Basketball Victoria employee, Call of Duty fiend, we've just found out as well, and now currently living alone, unfortunately. Jonty Brown. Welcome, Jonty, to the Talking Split Podcast.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, as you stated, a bit of a COD fiend in lockdown and now living by myself. So all the exciting things of life.
Yeah. We can only hope this lockdown doesn't go too long, so you've actually got someone to talk to or someone to see at some stage as well. But for those of you that may not be aware, Jonty is newly employed at Basketball Victoria, in particular in the wheelchair space. Jonty, just before we kick off, how about you give us a little bit of your background and how you got involved in wheelchair basketball and life to this point?
Yeah, for sure. So wheelchair basketball is a big thing for me at the moment. I play myself and have played for the last just over 5 years now. So not super, super long, but long enough to understand the game. So yeah, I was unfortunate and had an accident in 2015 when I was overseas on a school trip. And unfortunately, my left leg got permanently infected. Spent numerous weeks in hospital and stuff trying to fix that, which then led to me being left with a permanent disability in my left leg and the lower bottom of my spine from an infection. So I picked up wheelchair basketball in 2016 thanks to my gorgeous nan, who saw Dylan Olcott on TV and suggested that I started having a go at wheelchair basketball, and was fortunate enough that Bendigo at the time where I was living had a program there, and I went along and fell in love with it. And I guess the rest is history for me. It's taken me to amazing places around the world. Was fortunate enough to live abroad in Europe and play professionally, which was awesome. Of course, came back because of COVID. Was also a part of the 2018 gold medalist Victorian team, the under 23 Australian Championships, which was another awesome feat, and was a part of the under 23 Australian team that won bronze in Toronto as well at the World Championships. So yeah, a lot has happened in the 5 years, and I've wound back up to now be fortunate enough to work for Basketball Victoria and hopefully guide a few young athletes through a similar pathway to myself and, you know, help out where I can. So yeah.
Seems I captained that Kevin Coombs Cup team as well. Like, we don't want to undersell you on that either. Just out of curiosity, were you involved in basketball at all before your injury and moving into the wheelchair basketball space?
Yeah, so I was a very mediocre player that played, probably local mixed competition on a Sunday afternoon. But I did play running or able-bodied basketball, as I like to call it, from about the age of 8 until 17 when I had my accident. So a fair stint. If you ever ask any of my mates, I could not shoot the ball to save my life. And for some unbeknown reason in wheelchair basketball, all I do is shoot the ball. So it's a weird, maybe I should have just been sitting down for all those junior years when I was running around. So I don't know, but my brother was a good basketball. He played a few years state level and stuff. So basketball's always sort of been a part of our family, and my sister now plays as well. So yeah.
Awesome.
Recently, obviously we mentioned before, recently hired at BV. So tell us a little bit about your, I guess, roles and responsibilities and maybe how some of your, I guess, past experience will help you in that role.
Yeah. So yeah, as you said, like, recently employed by Basketball Victoria as their diversity and inclusion officer for wheelchair basketball. So pretty much I'm overlooking all wheelchair basketball throughout the state, whether that's metro or regional, from, you know, beginners, the grassroots level, all the way through to touching with the high performance sort of side of it, with our newly included state development program, which is an up and coming program that's fresh and exciting for athletes that hopefully leads them into playing or representing the state at some stage, but also to starting new programs, open age sessions for beginners that want to play wheelchair basketball or want to be involved in the sport. Of course, our goal is to have programs close enough for everybody to travel to within hopefully an hour. But of course, being a big state, it is a hard sort of situation to be in. So it's about trying to find those target areas throughout the state and try and improve their programs. We have a few programs that have been running for years, such as, you know, Bendigo, Ballarat, Geelong, and all the way up to Wodonga, of course. And we have, you know, those smaller programs that run with, you know, a few wheelchair participants in Warrnambool as well. So we do have programs around the state, but it's just, you know, my role is to work with those guys and try and improve their sort of pathway for athletes. And yeah, we're fortunate enough to also get a van at Basel Victoria now. So school clinics are going to start pumping out for myself, which is a huge feeding ground for athletes and finding and hopefully discovering the next Paralympian in our sport. So yeah, that's there's a lot to it, but yeah, hopefully, you know, we can bring it all together and, you know, be the best state for wheelchair basketball. So we're not too far off.
Would travel, like you mentioned, you know, trying to make sure they're not having to travel more than an hour, you know, to get to practice or to be able to participate. So that's obviously a bit of a barrier for wheelchair athletes and coaches, I would say as well, like a lack of competition in across the board, across the state. What other barriers would you say there are for both athletes and coaches to get involved?
Yeah, great question. I think the biggest barrier for, you know, people to be involved is, of course, chairs. I think that's a huge thing for athletes and stuff because, and it's a simple sort of explanation, is that if anybody wants to go and play local football, they go and buy, you know, a $50, $100 pair of football boots and pay their registration and rock up to training and, you know, they're good to go. It's the same as basketball. You just buy a pair of shoes and you're good to go if you've got an association. Whereas wheelchair basketball, our chairs are specifically built and designed for the athlete. And these chairs are, you know, not cheap. Like off the top of my head, mine was about $8,500, $9,000 for my chair alone. And that's, you know, your pretty average value for a chair. So it's about, you know, trying to help an athlete the best as possible. And I think Basel Victoria do a great job in that, in, you know, loaning and supplying chairs to associations so that people can get started. And it's also about the associations as well, is, you know, they provide chairs to athletes that need them. Associations, you know, always after chairs to buy, and, you know, they might be just your basic beginner chairs, but it's a start. And even your basic beginner chairs, you know, are $2,000 a pop. So it's, that's probably the biggest barrier as an athlete is that, it's also the, you know, the accessibility to get to stadiums and stuff, because not all people drive, and, you know, it's a responsibility on parents, which is the same as able-bodied athletes and all the rest. But of course, you know, trying to lug around a wheelchair or two in a car is not always the easiest, and you can't jump in a taxi with two wheelchairs because, yeah, it's a lot of space to take up. And yeah, I think that's the hardest part. And for coaches as well, is the biggest thing for, I think, for coaches learning, is because the sport is not, you know, huge, it's growing. I think the opportunities is limited. So, you know, we try and get as many tournaments and as many camps and, you know, as many training sessions together so that coaches and athletes can grow as one and improve as a whole. So yeah, of course, with COVID, it's the same as everybody else. The opportunities are limited for everybody. So the more we can get in, the better.
Yeah. It's funny, like I was at the SDP camp and just little things I didn't even think of, you know, and, you know, I was asking where one of the athletes was and they were in the bathroom needing assistance to get changed. And I just didn't even think of that, like, or, you know, double doors having to be open to allow them to get through. And, you know, I'm just opening doors and just let, you know, like really naive to all of the things that have to sort of go in to allow these athletes to be able to participate. So it's, yeah, and even the growth, you know, you the chairs are tailored for the athlete and then they grow and then you've got to get a new chair. And, you know, it's not like you said, it's not like buying another $150 pair of runners, you know, it's, and then what do you do with the old one and all that sort of stuff. It's just, yeah, the things that I'm every time I see those athletes, I'm just blown away by them and their parents and what they've actually given to allow these athletes to be able to participate in programs or competitions. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting to look at and stuff. So, yeah, and I think the thing is the chairs is the biggest thing because, you know, they don't take overnight to build. They take a few months. So, yeah, I think that's a big thing for us. But it's becoming more and more accessible for everybody, so it's good.
Well, the accessibility side of things is difficult. Like, I think about a stadium that's around the corner from us now, and you've got to walk down probably 40 stairs to actually get to the courts in the first place. So even, like, we can say that we want everyone to have access to a program within an hour of them, but that's not always easy, depending on what the stadium looks like as well. So, I mean, there's all sorts of things, and there's been a lot of time and work and effort put in from a lot of associations and councils and things like that to make them wheelchair accessible and lifts and ramps and all those kinds of things. Sometimes it's simply not possible. Like, if you do live in regional Victoria, that might be a 2.5 hour trip, and that's just another barrier for those athletes to try and get involved in it. And that's not an easy sell for people because they probably have incurred additional costs with potentially being born with a disability, incurring one along the way, potentially having to make adjustments to their house and how they live and things like that. All of a sudden, those costs start to add up, and a chair is a really significant cost on top of that. And that's a difficult justification because they're trying to work out how important is this compared to being able to manage my everyday life as well. That's a really difficult side of things.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, exactly right. And it's also like you're not just buying a sports chair, like you might need to buy an everyday chair as well, which are, you know, 10 grand. So you're looking at, you know, 28 grand, or sorry, a 19 to 20 grand for two chairs that you need. Like, it's not like it's a, oh, like we can wait until the price come down, or oh, we don't need it right now. Like, we do. So yeah, it's, but the accessibility thing, like, Australia are so far ahead. The amount of times my housemate Jeremy, who I live with, who's going to Tokyo, or flew out for Tokyo yesterday, we lived together a year in Paris, and the amount of times I had to carry him and his chair down some stairs in Europe was was next level, because Europeans are just like, stairs here, stairs there, yeah. No lift. Like, it's,
or if they have a lift, it's like 2x2x2. Like,
yeah,
it's tiny.
Nobody can fit in it. It's nuts. So it's so much better here in Australia. I'll put that out there. But, you know, there's always that, there's always room for change. So yeah, and until you're put in a situation where it's you, or you're helping somebody that you know, you sort of forget about little things like even how close you park to the gutter, so that somebody can wheel a chair right up to the door so they can just jump out, because, you know, if they fall down the gutter, like, I'm not lifting big old Jeremy and his big arms out of the gutter. Like, I struggle at the gym enough, so.
No, that's exactly right, and it's really interesting. How do you go about recruiting athletes into this pathway as well? Because for some people, they've potentially not considered this. For some, that it's been something they've been dealing with, you know, maybe like club foot or something like that, that they were born with a disability and have always been in a wheelchair and that sort of an athlete. How do you deal with, like, bringing people into the sport?
Yeah, that's a great question that I'm still trying to find the answer for at times as well. Is I think the biggest thing for us is the, I think a social media platform is huge. I think that the more social media that we can pump out, the better from everybody's point of view. And I think trying to link up with the right people at the moment. So, you know, Royal Talbot in Melbourne is the rehabilitation center for people with spinal cord injuries or amputees. And, you know, they have everybody in Victoria, if you ever have a spinal cord injury or an amputee, come through there. And I think that's a big area that is not necessarily missed. I think that it's just, afterthought sort of thing. And they're the people that, you know, we're trying to get in contact with and I've been trying to work with at the moment, is, you know, they could be the big feeding ground for us to bring athletes into the sport. I also think a big sort of area that's missed is people like myself. like I think that a lot of people would look at me and not think that I play wheelchair basketball because I just use one crutcher to get around. So, you know, I look like an ACL injury or something like that. Because I am a minimal disability, it doesn't mean that I can't play wheelchair basketball. And I think, like, you know, we'll touch on the classification stuff, but it's you're all you've all got a classification depending on your disability and your level of movement and stuff. So that's why I think the school clinics are a great thing as well. Especially when I was in Europe, they pumped them out like there was no tomorrow. And that's where they found, you know, athletes, because the kids are going through the program that, or going through school, sorry, that we live with a disability, whether that's minimal or, you know, a higher end disability, can be found early and put into the programs. And that's what I'm excited for going forward, is to, you know, reach out to these schools and get in there and, you know, hopefully find, you know, 4 or 5 kids that have never seen wheelchair basketball before, because A, it's never been a sport part of the school, and B, it's not publicized anywhere. Like, you know, we are getting to the point where we see a lot more ads on TV with people living with disability. But then again, like, I still think that there's a big target area out there in terms of how we can approach that. So yeah, at the moment it's just school clinics and trying to link in with hospitals and stuff like that to try and find new athletes. So
is that a difficult conversation to have with people that have potentially had a spinal injury? I mean, their life's turned literally upside down, and all of a sudden you're coming in and saying, hey, we actually would really like you to play wheelchair basketball. Is that almost a case of, look, plant the seed a little bit, this is an option here for you, and then try and revisit them a little bit later once they've had a little bit of time to settle into their life-changing moments?
Yeah, 100%. It's definitely something that, you know, it's one of those touchy subjects, but also at the same time, it's I guess it's coming from somebody that plays the sport and living with a disability as well. I think that, you know, not necessarily makes it easier, but it's, you know, that smoother transition because you have something to relate to them. But yeah, it is very much plant the seed. Like, you know, I've spoke to athletes that aren't playing wheelchair basketball yet, but are eligible to play wheelchair basketball, whether they be, you know, an amputee or a spinal cord injury, that, you know, want to try and do something else or continue to play able-bodied basketball. But, you know, we've planted the seed, so when the time does come, you know, that maybe they might not be able to keep up with able-bodied sports, or, you know, might have an interest in wheelchair basketball with the Paralympics coming up, they know that we're here. So yeah, it's about planting the seed. And you know, I think it's also just keeping in contact with, you know, them and, hey, how you going? Like, you know, it's always nice to reach out to somebody and check in. And yeah, but I think the biggest thing is just planting that seed and having that conversation and letting them know that we are here for whenever they need or whatever they need in terms of assistance. So yeah.
Well, and hopefully the coaches that listen to this podcast, you know, that do coach able-bodied and coach within clubs, you know, keep all of that in mind. You know, they see an athlete that they think could potentially be or get to an age, you know, they might be playing with a prosthetic or whatever it might be to a certain age, and then once that gets to the point where that prosthetic's going to hamper their ability to participate, then – you know, be able to encourage them toward wheelchair basketball and, you know, let them know that there's still a pathway for them. And it's not just, you know, you've got to, you know, under 16s event around about, and it's, you know, the game's a little too quick. There's still something else out there that they can continue playing a game that they love playing.
Even if you stop playing, 100%. Coaching.
Or coaching,
like getting involved as a coach as well. Like it's an easy way to stay involved in the sport, which I think is really important for a lot of the athletes. Because let's face it, it's a huge network. Like that can be a really great grounding area for a lot of the people that have gone through a trauma or have been born with a disability that are struggling to find the way in life potentially at that point as well. To have a network around them that they can tap into is just vital. Like, I mean, I'm just spitballing here, Jonty, but socially, obviously, you still have your friends that you've grown up with and things like that, but this is now a huge part of your life that sits not separately, but just as a little bit off to the side.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and that's the thing, is I've still got all my mates from school and I still catch up with them frequently and when we're not busy. But at the same time, like, I've met some of my best mates now through wheelchair sports, to the point where, like, you know, I live with one of them now, and yeah, wouldn't have it any other way, I think, you know. And I think there's a big stigma as well as around people with disabilities and stuff. I'll tell you what, like, they all still love going to the pub on a Friday night or watching the footy around sport. So, you know, it's exactly the same social side as anybody else in the world. It's, you know, they just live their life a little bit differently. So, yeah.
I think it's really good though with, you know, programs and things like that, especially for young athletes. So, you know, talking sort of eight to 15, you know, having them around people who understand what they've been through or what they're going through, that they're not alone as well. Mm-hmm. Like one of the most amazing moments, and hopefully I don't turn into a girl because every time I think about it, I get a bit emotional. But one of the most amazing moments at the first SDP camp was one of the parents coming up and thanking us for the program for one, but then just sort of saying, you know, it's just amazing how different he has been here when he's around people, you know, that he can relate to, and he knows he's not different. You know, he's the same as these other athletes here, and that was just an amazing moment. And I think it's great to be able to, you know, have these programs and things, you know, the clubs and associations that are giving these athletes these opportunities, like really should be championed. I think it's amazing that they're, you know, they're not just focusing on the able-bodied athletes, they're focusing on an inclusive program that 100%. That allow them to have a community that they can turn to. You know, if a disability athlete was to come to me and ask me questions, I don't know what I would say because I haven't lived that, you know. So, yeah. You know, having other people that they can relate to and role models such as yourself, Jonty, as well, that they can say, you know, they can see what you've done and all those sort of things and that there is a progression and there is the ability to let basketball allow you to travel and all that sort of stuff. I just think it's huge. So to the associations, and we'll get you to list them in a second, but the associations that are offering these programs, like just can't thank you guys enough.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, exactly right. And I think that's a big thing you touched on is the opportunity within the sport that not many people know about. And it's the same, like I spoke to a parent at last SDP camp and, you know, sort of told her about the opportunities and she was like, I had no idea about any of this stuff that was available. Like to the point where, and it was definitely an option that I was weighing up heavily, was a 4-year full ride scholarship to some huge college in the US. Like nobody knows that, but you know, like you can go play at Arizona, you can go play at Alabama, you know, like these big colleges, full ride scholarships on wheelchair basketball. Like it's, and there's a lot of Australian athletes that have done that and, you know, not many people know it. So, you know, if we can provide that for a young fella that's coming through and saying, oh, like I wish I could go to college, like the able-bodied athletes, well, mate, like you can.
So where would athletes or coaches for that matter, you know, you listed a few before, but where are the associations that are actually putting into wheelchair basketball?
Yeah, so at the moment we've got a fair few. A lot of them are regionally actually, which is super exciting for
country.
The country, good old. We always know the way, don't we? But I'm stuck here in Melbourne, so I can't say too much. I might get my house egged or something. So we've got Bendigo Basketball Association. They're doing a great job down there, and that's who I started off my, I guess, adventure with. And now with Bendigo Braves, we've got Ballarat. They've got a program that's running down there out of their new stadium. Which is exciting, and touching on Ballarat is the championships are there next year as well. So you get to see the Kevin Coombs Cup, our state team, play down there next year if all goes ahead. Geelong, they're a huge program that's been running for many, many years now, and they're sort of a prime example of how to run a program. They've got domestic competitions and stuff down there, which is incredible. We've got Warrnambool down there. They're running out of their stadium with one athlete down that way, and you know, just people jumping in chairs and stuff that helping him out, which is amazing, and he's going to be an incredible athlete. Wodonga, so they're running their programs as well, and they're sort of linked in, you know, Aubrey Wodonga, run out of the Wodonga Wolves Stadium, Shepparton, their association as well, running out of there. And then we sort of go into the metro areas where, you know, you've got your Kilsyth who are running. We've got the MSAC programs that run every Sunday, our state development program for athletes. And then Western Port on the peninsula, they've just purchased new chairs. So we're working with those guys and getting their program up and running. So, yeah, that's sort of where we're at the moment in terms of programs. Of course, we have target areas and we have athletes and stuff down in Gippsland, which is something that we're working towards. And there's a few come and try days that are happening down in the Gippsland region. So, you know, hopefully we can get something down that way. But yeah, that's sort of our list of programs at the moment. So yeah, it's exciting.
Awesome.
So the biggest thing I can't get my head around with wheelchair basketball is the classification system. How the points work. Not good at maths. I'll happily put my hand up and say that that is not a strong suit in my area. So probably couldn't coach the sport because I can't count. Can you take us through how the classification system works in wheelchair basketball, please?
Yeah, it is confusing and it takes a while to wrap your head around. So the classification system is based on your disability. So the lower the points you are, the more disabled, I guess, you are. And, you know, the higher points you are, the more minimal your disability is. So it all depends on sort of your core function and your ability to stabilize yourself. So, you know, at one point I might be a really high break in their spine and they'll be in a chair full time. But it also might, you know, be like an incomplete quad who, you know, can still move around and walk, but, you know, have very minimal movement. And then, you know, you work your way through. So you got your two pointers who, you know, are sort of your lower spinal breaks or stuff like that. Your 3-point classifications are usually from your waist down. Or a lot of spina bifida athletes as well are about threes. And then, you know, you work your way into your fours, which is like myself. So like minimal disability, amputees, are fours, just because you only really affected in one sort of limb. So I still push through my right leg a lot because it's my good one when I play. And then it sort of gets broken down into half points as well. So, you know, you got your 1.5, your 2.5, your 3.5, and then your maximums, your 4.5, who are usually people with like very, very, very minimal disability who can walk. I will be honest, I'm not super over the top of the, or super over the 4.5s, because they just did a full worldwide reclassification of four halves. And a lot of people got classed out of the actual sport, which is very, you know, sad for the sport because they were, you know, top tier athletes, but they, you know, might have been like a full hip replacement or, you know, a knee replacement or, you know, three ACLs or something very minimal that, you know, doesn't allow them to compete at able-bodied sports to the quality of level or yeah. So it's confusing, but then to break it down even more, mate, it's, so when you play, you're only allowed 5 people on the court, same as not able-bodied sport, and you're allowed 14 points on the court. So the easy way to explain it is that if I'm on the court and I'm a 4, then like you take my 4 points off the 14, then the coach has 10 points left for the next 4 players. So a lot of your common combinations at the moment is a 1, 3, 3, 3, and a 4. Another common one is 1, 1, 4-4-4. So they're sort of what you're running with at the moment. A lot of teams in the last maybe 3 years have gone very midpoint lineups. So quick, can shoot the ball really well, give up a bit of size, but the ability to be able to press teams and speed and, you know, the ability to shoot the ball sort of outweighs the bigs that are sometimes, you know, that bit slower because they've got a lot more to push around. So, yeah.
And do they generally sort of sub point for point? Like, would you have a 4 that sort of sits on the bench and then when it's your turn to come out, you're replaced with a 4, just to make the whole maths part of it for people like Rob a little bit easier?
Yeah, it chops and changes. So usually, yeah, you'd sometimes switch a 4 for a 4. But at the moment, for example, the Australian team, hopefully there's no other international teams going to listen to this. But the Australian team, they run a 1-3-3-3-4, and then their like next group in is 1-half-1-half-3-4-4. Yeah, so they sort of like switch in as holes,
yeah.
Or you know they might just you know switch in the 3-for-3 and a 4-for-4. It sort of depends on who you play, I guess, the same as any other sport, who you play and what sort of their lineup looks like. The best thing about Australia is the depth of us. Like all 12 guys can get on the floor, and all 12 guys will do something for you. There's no real holes in our sort of game, and that's sort of why we've been, you know, a top three team for the last 20 years, is purely because, yeah, we don't really have any weaknesses. And you know, if you need a switch, then yeah. But you always need someone that can do maths, because that's what the assistant coaches are for. I feel they just like sit down there with their notepad and like, yeah. There's one coach in Australia that he always puts players over points, puts them on, and he waits to see if the referees pick up on it.
What's the like, penalty?
Tech foul.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then you got to sub him out, of course, yeah, and like make sure it's right. But he always throws it in and waits to see if the referees pick up or the scorers table pick up. it's quite good, like, because everyone knows it's happening, and he's like happy to give away a tech foul. But like, you know, you might get 4 quick points in 30 seconds because you're playing over points. Like,
makes sense. So all those coaches that contact me saying, "Look, I have real problems subbing." You have no problem subbing.
Yeah.
When you have 7 and 8 kids on a Saturday, you have no concept of how hard this can potentially be for someone else.
Yeah, exactly. So, but no, it's quality. It is good. But,
so when we look at like the skill sets of the wheelchair athletes, like, what are we talk about shooting being the master skill in able-bodied athletes and things like that. How much is that the same in wheelchair athletes, or is wheelchair control probably more valuable? Like, where does it sit with you guys?
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I reckon I made my first teams just because I could shoot. I could not push a chair to save my life. So, but it's a mixture of both, to be completely honest. I think like you have to be exceptional in your chair. The ability to defend from top to bottom it has to be impeccable, but also the ability to shoot the ball at a high clip and from anywhere on the floor is huge for us. I think that, you know, if you can't shoot the 3 ball in today's day and age for an able-bodied athlete, it's big. But also for wheelchair, like, it's huge. Like one of my teammates who I trained with, Tristan Knowles, I've never seen a guy shoot a 3 ball better, able-bodied or wheelchair. Like that guy, you defend him a meter and a half outside the 3-point line in a wheelchair, hand in his face, and just knocks it down. Like he lives off being defended, I think. Like he's sometimes just better off not defending him because it rattles him a bit more. But I think shooting's huge, but also just the ability to push your chair. It's if you're slow, then you're sort of screwed. You can just get back picked and not make it up the other end of the floor for the full 24 seconds. So, and that's a big thing I found out early is if you're slow, then you're going to have a hard time pushing up and down the floor.
So how much time do you have to put into your body physically to be able to be better at moving your chair? Like, is that consist of like some S&C work, or is that just simply time in chair?
So it's a bit of both. So we do, I know when I was at the top, I was probably doing about 24 hours a week. So I was doing probably, 2 sessions a day when I was in Europe, and that was a mixture of in chair and in the weights room as well, and then play every weekend. Back here, it's a bit different because, you know, we all have jobs and the ability to get on courts and stuff is hard. But, we do weight sessions 2 to 3 times a week. We have an S&C coach on a Wednesday, which is the most dreadful session because it's just pure death of pushing. And he knows it too. He comes in, he's like, today's going to be fun, guys. Like, but he's awesome. But yeah, so it's just about being in chair. We work in blocks as well of what we want to work on. So like we've been doing a lot of speed and power push at the moment. And now we're going into a new sort of block of just strength, which is, yeah. But at the end of the day, it's just time in chair. The more time you spend in that chair, the more time you push that chair, it's different. And we have a lot of things like on a Saturday or Sunday morning, we go down to an athletics track because the ground's that bit softer, so it's harder for us to push in because the wheels sink, and we just push on that for a good hour, and it sucks. So
that's sadistic. Like, that is next level stuff. It's, like,
yeah, but yeah, it's just about being in chair. Like, I still, and it's still a running joke, like, I suck at playing defense, so like, I still need to work on my chair skills for defense, like my chair skills defensively, I should say. And yeah, as you said, it's just time in chair, really. But of course, there's, you know, things you can do to increase that. So, yeah.
That's funny. I think it was, I'll go in on a limb and say about 5 years ago, we had our under 16 state team used to train at Kilsyth on a yep. Sunday afternoon. And we had a clinic. So Ben Ettridge was in town at the time. Mm-hmm. And we just sort of said, look, we'll put a clinic on with some wheelchair athletes. We'll have our under 16 state team jump in as well. And it was an element of, we'll show you how you would coach your able-bodied athletes and some drills yep. that you would use. And then the wheelies athletes would come in and do the exact same drills. So there was no real change in what you were doing. It just changed with the like the points of emphasis. But yep. we threw our under 16 state team kids in chairs for an hour beforehand and let them just hoon around and be idiots. And it was bedlam. Yeah. Like, they had, one, no idea what they were doing. Two, regularly fell out of chairs, which was a little bit problematic, yeah. but that's a different yeah. problem altogether. But three, they had no idea how difficult that was. Like, to just yeah. actually move their body and move the chair around the court whilst trying to think about things like, actually, I have to catch the ball, or I need to dribble it, or I have to shoot it. There's just yeah. so much more going on. It's something that they sort of took for granted, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is. It's very different as well, but yeah.
So what sort of rules are we looking at that are going to be slightly different from able-bodied into the wheelchair space?
To be completely honest, the only rule is like a double dribble. That's probably the only rule that sort of changes. So we don't have technically a double dribble. The other rule is that you are only allowed to push your wheels twice, and then you have to bounce the ball. Whether that be, you know, you push left and then right, that counts as two, or you push them both together, that's two as well. And then you have to dribble the ball. To be like, you know, it's great at the start as a beginner and stuff to iron out that. And there is ways to make it a bit easier, but you know, once you sort of get to the higher level, my chair setup doesn't allow me to sit the ball on my lap, and I probably never would sit the ball on my lap because, you know, hands are flying everywhere and people are going to pick it out. So it's, yeah, you still, it's very similar. You know, you got to dribble the ball on the side away from the defender, and same as able body, you know, so you don't get the ball picked. That's probably the only real like huge difference. We still have hand fouls. We still have, you know, like charges and stuff. It's all just depends on the way you hit and contact a chair. We play on the same size ring, same size 3-point line, same length free throw. So yeah, it's all the same. Five fouls, you're out of the game. Yeah, so all the rules are pretty similar except for that double dribble. Of course, if you push the wheel three times without bouncing it, then it's technically a travel and just a turnover. So, yeah.
So you mentioned before about international opportunities and things like that. Can you go through, I guess, both for coaches and players, what sort mm-hmm. of opportunities are available for athletes and coaches in the wheelchair space?
Yeah, for sure. I'll start with athletes first, I guess. So I think the biggest thing for athletes is the opportunities that are available for you guys. So I know that I played state for 2 years and then was really, really eager to go to college. There's a lot of colleges out there in the US that do offer full scholarships for athletes. Of course, you know, you have to be at some sort of level to be offered a scholarship and stuff, but it's never out of reach for nobody. So, you know, there's a lot of pathways through that, and there's a lot of athletes that have gone through that pathway. And that's just, you know, sort of either a coach will contact you from there because they've seen, like, you know, your stats, or they've seen, you know, your name posted about here and there. Or, you know, there's also that opportunity to reach out to those colleges and say, like, hey, this is me, like, this is what I do. And, you know, if you've got coaches and other athletes to back and support you and say, hey, like, yeah, I think you'd be a great fit for your program, then, you know, that's an opportunity. I know, like, I still get a few messages and stuff from colleges saying, hey, like, do you guys have anybody that's a 3-pointer that is this age that would be good for us to bring into our college? Because, like, the eligibility and stuff, like I'm not available, like I can't go because I've played professionally. So, you know, there's that opportunity. And then there's also Europe, which I was very fortunate enough that one of my teammates on a flight back from a National League round said, oh, have you ever thought about Europe? And I was like, no, not really. And he was like, oh, I'll reach out to my club that I used to play for and see if they'd be interested. And very luckily, like I was very lucky and they were, and I went over there. And I think once you get to there, then, you know, you're opened up to a whole new world. So, you know, like you, I went and played a season there. I didn't have a great year, to be completely honest with you, but like the amount of offers and stuff after that from different countries and different places is huge. Like, yeah, like I had heaps of clubs that were interested in, you know, of course we're not at the professional level where you've got a manager or anything. So you're just negotiating like your contracts yourself. So you're like, oh, I wonder if this is good money or like, so it's just about like chatting to other teammates and stuff that have been to those clubs or being in Europe, have played in Europe, and you're just like, oh, they've said this, like, do you think this is right? And you know, it's a bit scary, but it's all part of the process. So, and then yeah, so yeah, of course you got your, you know, the States and Europe, and there's European clubs all over. And then, you know, there's National League opportunities here in Australia, which is, you know, has been off and on this year, and it looks very different. But of course, hopefully next year, next season, that will be, you know, nice and smooth. So yeah, that's sort of your big three at the moment, is your National League, your Europe and the US, and whatever path you sort of want to take, it's you know, it's, they're all sort of there. And of course your national program, the Australian under 23s and under 25 for women, and the Australian rollers and gliders as well. So there are all opportunities that are presented to you as you make through the ranks. And yeah, and then I guess for coaches as well, I think we have a lot of great coaches, to be completely honest with you. Some of the best coaches in wheelchair basketball were ex-able-bodied coaches that have just somehow found their way into the sport. And they're, you know, we've got my under 23 coach for the Australian team is now assistant coach for the Perth Wildcats, or one of the coaches for the Perth Wildcats now. And, you know, he's gone from able body to wheelchair, took us to Worlds, and now gone back to now part of the NBL program. So for coaches and stuff, I think it, starting locally is always a great opportunity with the new SDP program as well. I think that's something that we can look forward to, you know, having coaches come in and have a look at how we run that. And of course, you know, Zoe, it's with the opportunity that's there for athletes and coaches is huge now. And then, you know, we've got the National League program and stuff, which we hope to get back up and running as good or as quickly as possible in Victoria due to, you know, COVID and stuff, and losing that opportunity of having a national team here. There's always that opportunity that, you know, we get one back and we're going to need coaches, we're going to need, you know, all that sort of stuff. So there's that. And of course, there's, you know, the national program and being involved. We've got a couple of coaches here in Melbourne. We've got three coaches here in Melbourne, actually, that are all part of the Australian program. It's in some way, whether that be the under 23 men's, under 25s, or the both national men and women's teams. So, you know, I think the best thing is to reach out and start, reach out to an association that I listed before. They're always a great starting point to see how you can get involved and go from there. And of course you can reach out to myself and ask what sort of possibilities or opportunities there are throughout the state for you to be involved, because at the same time, it's in a nice way, it's a quicker pathway for coaches sometimes in a wheelchair sport to be an able-bodied coach. You can be as good as you like, but if you don't get noticed, or you know, you're not at an association that's not big, you sometimes get missed out on. Whereas wheelchair basketball, it's a smaller community, and you know, if you're a good coach and you're willing to learn, the pathway to get to the top is a lot shorter and a lot easier. So, or I shouldn't say easier, but you know, you're competing against less people. So yeah.
Yeah, I think at that clinic, the coach that was there said the exact same thing, you know, and with no disrespect, they were just saying that, you know, there's not the numbers that you're going up against in wheelchair basketball coaching as there are in able-bodied. So, yeah, certainly something to think about.
Yeah, most definitely. So – you were in the selection process for the Paralympics going to Tokyo. Like, talk us through what that was like, what you sort of went through with that, the ups and downs of it, and all those kinds of things as well.
Yeah, it was I was very fortunate. It was my first time to be a part of, you know, an international or a Paralympic selection camp. Of course, it was like nervous as anything, but as all athletes are, it's the excitement of it. So, yeah, going into it and stuff, it was sort of the reason I went to Europe, to be completely honest. I went there to better my game as quickly as possible. And, you know, I felt that I came back in pretty good stead. My year in France was, I was very, very satisfied with, and I had a really good European championships tournament personally. And, I came back and then we sort of went into that full lockdown and stuff. And, you know, it was hard to get on court, and the motivation and stuff was like, well, I'm back and I'm like living at home with like all my mates and like having to drive to Melbourne and stuff for training. It was like I was still there and I was still training, and I had one of my best mates living with me who came back from Spain. So he just moved in with my family and lived with us for 3 months. So it was good to still have him there and train and all the rest. But our camps just got kept, they just got put off, which was the hardest part for us, is we would train and get into, you know, the best shape that we are. And then they're like, oh, we can't go ahead. Like, oh, this state can't come in, or this state can't. So we're just not having it. And we didn't get our first camp. So I got back in March last year, and we didn't have our first camp until, I'm going to say Feb of this year or January as a whole. And, you know, a year of not being at that high level intensity, it's not ideal. I think for me also is I sort of went in half injured as well. Like I did a show, like I had injured my shoulder earlier or late last year. And I was just sort of niggling with that, which wasn't ideal, but like it is what it is. And yeah, I think the first camp was, you know, a big sort of, not step up, but, you know, a big sort of taste test of like, all right, like we're all friends off court, but at the end of the day, like we're all here to make the squad to go to Tokyo. Like we're, like we've got 20 of you guys here and we're only picking 12. Like, so yeah, that was big. And then, you know, we had our second camp in March, April time. And that was, you know, another big camp that was, it's a long week. Like I'm sure you guys know, like selection camps, like you're on court like four times a day, just like just getting drilled. Like it's just like a make or break sort of week. Like it's either you're like there every single training session and you have to be on the top of your game every training session, because you just know like if you drop, like they're gonna notice. And so it's a tough week physically and mentally. And I'm probably the least experienced guy in the squad. Like I've played for the least amount of time, so you know I'm competing against guys that, like one of my teammates, Tristan, he's been playing for like 30 odd years. So like, and I'm only 23. So it's like, yeah. And heck, he went to his first Paralympics when I was like six or seven. So, you know, like he's been around forever, and he's the guy that comes out and he's just, you know, fierce competitor that we're best mates off court, but on court, like, we're fighting for a spot against each other. So it was a crazy process. Of course, like unfortunately I didn't make the 12, which, you know, like it was always hard at the times, but at the same time, like I was super happy to be a part of the 20 and also understand that it's sport. Like you're gonna, you know, they have to cut somebody, and it sucks to be you, but at the same time, like I still have the hunger and desire to go to a Paralympics, and it's only 3 years away. And you know, we've got world championships next year, and then you've got qualifiers for Paris again. So yeah, I'm still going to be sticking around for quite a while, so I'm sure you'll see my face floating around in the sport somewhere. And I think the best thing about it is that I'm one of the youngest guys in the squad. So it's just all about being there and competing for a spot, you know, year in, year out. And yeah. So, but all the guys that went, incredible athletes, of course. Like there's nobody that doesn't deserve a spot to be there. And I think, you know, if you've never watched the Paralympics, this year's the year to watch it, because I wouldn't be surprised if the boys walk away with the gold, the way that the team's been constructed. It's I think it's the year for these boys.
That sounds really, without trying to retire anyone, what's the sort of age that you can usually play up to in wheelchair basketball? It's usually sort of that late 30s you get in the able body. What's wheelies look like?
Yeah, it's about 40 something. So I've got, yeah, there's one guy there, he's 42 this year. So he's going to retire after the, or I shouldn't say that because he might change his mind. But I think, you know, he comes to that age. Tristan, on the other hand, Tristan Knowles, he was my role model when I first ever started. He was one I used to look up on Google and was like, oh, I wish I could be like this bloke. And, you know, now we have beers together at the back of his backyard on a weekend. So it's surreal, as, but he's 38 and he's going to go to Paris as well in 3 years. So, you know, and I think if he goes to Paris, he breaks the Australian wheelchair basketball record for 6 Paralympics if he goes to Paris. So this is his 5th one this year. There's a great story that just got done on him from on 7+, which, you know, it's good to have that publicity. So, yeah, it's about 40-something. So, you know, if you take that into account, I've still got 15 to 20 years still. Brisbane 32, I was like, oh, I'll be old then, but I'll only be 35. So I still have I'll have some sort of ticker left in me, I hope.
Most definitely. So I mean, you touched on a little bit with the rollers. So what are the chances of medals for the rollers and gliders? And I'll throw a caveat in this. We asked two of our high performance coaches what our chances were for Boomers and Opals a couple of weeks back, and they both said we'd roll Team USA. We edited that out because it didn't go to plan. Okay. So if you get this wrong, don't panic. We can take this out at some point.
To be honest, USA are a top two favourite as well, for probably the men. I don't know, maybe the women. The women are very different because a lot of their athletes got classed out. But start with the men. I definitely think the men are a top three. I think they will medal. I think whoever did the pooling for the Olympics needs to be fired because they put the 4 best teams in the world in the same pool. They just pulled them out of a hat and they're like, yep, A, B, A, B. And they got the 4 best top teams in the world all in the same pool. So don't know who did that, but if you get out of the pool rounds, then you're probably a good shot. I think the gold medal match will be the US and Australia. That's my prediction. I think that, I think we'll definitely be a gold or a silver. Of course, you always hope for a gold. So at the same time, the USA are an elite team and so are Australia, and whoever's day it is, then yeah. My surprise packet, I reckon, for the tournament is Iran for the men and Germany. I reckon they're the two teams that are going to be the wild cards. So they're my two teams to watch, I reckon. And then for the women, they've sort of had a big restructure, so I think it's going to be a very interesting tournament for them. I think the Netherlands for the women will win it. Very well drilled team, always around the mark, very strong, and young as well. So they're probably my pick for the women is the Netherlands. But I think the Australian women, I think they'll win a couple of games and, you know, be that sort of middle of the pack sort of team. They've had a huge changeover, which has been unfortunate in the last year. They've lost probably three of their best players in the last year and a half, which of course is never ideal. You lose, you know, 3 of your starting 5. It's never going to help anybody. So, you know, for them, I think it's a very crucial tournament as well for them in the sport. And it's going to be a good test because their team is young, very young. So, I think it's a good building ground for them. So,
Without trying to retire you as well, is the hope that you eventually move into that coaching space once you're done with the playing side? Is this something that interests you a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to be sort of a coach /, you know, mentor for athletes coming through. Of course, like I always want to put sort of my playing first, of course, but I'm passionate to make as many Paralympics as I can as a player. But of course, like, you know, there's always that opportunity to coach. Like, I used to coach able body back in Bendigo for a couple of years, and coaching is always sort of a passion of mine. Definitely is on the cards when I retire and am an old man. So yeah.
That sounds good. Just don't get into the S&C world. You'll be hated by everyone, it turns out, in the wheelie space. So how big, like, I know it's only a fairly new program, which obviously you've had your fingerprints on, Zoe, with the SDP, and Sheena Aitken has had a massive impact as well. Jason Bryant heading up the SDP program. So talk to us a little bit about what that's been like so far, how many people are involved in it, and how can coaches come in and have a look at those sessions as well?
Yeah, the SDP program is honestly incredible. The interaction and the movement we've had of that in the last 2 months has been incredible. I know the first camp we had, I think maybe seven or eight athletes turn up. Of course, we had people at camps and stuff for the Australian program, which, you know, doesn't help. We had, I think, 21 maybe or something like that at the second camp. I can't remember off the top of my head. But at the moment, I've got like there's a few people still to sign up and stuff. But I think we're at about 28 or something athletes that are just, you know, floating. And from going from not having a program at all to 3 months later, you've got, you know, 28 athletes. It's crazy. And to be completely honest, it's not like I've had to go and hunt people down or like force myself to look for people. It's just interaction of social media, in like the word of mouth and stuff has just brought athletes out. And like, I connected with one lady that runs an organization down here for disability. And then she spoke to somebody at Monash Health the other day who spoke to somebody. And then I've got a phone call from this lady, and she just gave me two more athletes that had played wheelchair basketball previously but didn't know there was programs in Melbourne. And I was like, you know, it makes my job easier. I can just sit back and put the feet up because everyone's doing it for me. So, it's an incredible thing. Like, I know I would have loved to have it when I was coming through the ranks. And, I think I miss out on the program by like maybe a week or something. Like, I'm only 23 now, and I was like a December baby, so mum screwed me there. But I would have loved it. It's such a great feeding ground. It's such a great development program for coaches as well, because it gives them all these young athletes that are so raw but also talented in one spot. And at the end of the day, it's my goal and everybody else's goal is to have as many of our athletes attend a Paralympics if that's what they want to do, as possible. And, you know, it's got to start with A, good coaching, and B, a program that runs consistently for athletes. And, you know, we've got that at the moment. And we, like, I know that we're sort of at the moment, the word is that we are the state that everybody's going to try and model now with this program. And it just goes for the years of work that Sheena's done behind the scenes, and of course Zoe as well. And, you know, without them pushing it from years back, then it wouldn't have been what it is now. So, yeah, and also it's just a great feeding ground for our state program. Of course, we always want another gold medal. And I know it was when I was part of that team, it was, you know, unbelievable, because I think we were the first ever team to make a gold medal, a Victorian wheelchair team to make a gold medal game, and then also the first ever team to win one. So, you know, it's still one of my highest achievements, or one of my most memorable achievements, to win a gold medal at the Australian Championships, and also in Geelong, which was, you know, in Victoria in front of all my family and friends. And yeah, it's, so the SDP program, amazing. I think if coaches and stuff want to get involved, and it's just, you know, reach out and show your interest. Like, that's what I touched on before. Reach out to the associations, or reach out to myself or Zoe, or, you know, just anybody that say, hey, like, I've heard this, or I want to see what this program's all about. Because, you know, all it takes is one person to come down and say, hey, like, this is awesome. Like, I want to be involved. And that's what we've done so far, is we've just been adding little pieces into our team so that, you know, we just make it the best possible program that we can, not only for Victoria, but for athletes, parents, and all the rest. So
I think I'm pretty happy with your mum's work, I'll be honest, Jonty, because now you coach at it instead of playing in it. So it's one more coach. But it's really exciting that the program is growing and it's starting to check off phase one, I guess, of the whole plan of bringing this in. A really big thing for me is, you know, these athletes are in SDP. You know, they're separate entity. They're not, you know, anything like that. They are SDP athletes. They wear the same uniform. You know, they have their trainings. We've been really lucky to be able to have them get exposure with our service providers. You know, I've had Lisa Middleton came into Camp One and did a presentation on nutrition, and Bounce Health came in and did a presentation on injury management and prevention. Unfortunately, our next camp's been cancelled, which is a bit of a bummer. Dara McGuinness was going to come in and do some work on strength and conditioning and what athletes can do at home to help with their bodies and injury prevention again. So just taking, I guess, the sport in general to another level, showing them that, you know, there is a pathway, there is, you know, somewhere to go and being able to identify these athletes as well to get them into our state teams to hopefully get them, you know, moving along the pathway and getting into Australian teams or going to college or whatever it is. I would encourage coaches, even if you're not interested in coaching wheelchair basketball, come down and have a look. It was a massive eye-opener for me, and whilst I was a part of putting the program together, I didn't expect to have the reaction to it that I had. It was just outstanding to watch these athletes, the gratitude that they just organically show for people taking time to help them out or putting time into them. I would absolutely encourage any coach, come down and have a look and get involved if you so wish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that's the thing as well. And I think the biggest thing is all the athletes, you know, they all have a physical disability, but at the end of the day, the competitiveness is still there. That, you know, we all want to win. So it's a fierce, aggressive sport that's, you know, sort of cool that, you know, it doesn't matter what disability you have, like somebody's still going to try and take you out or try and score on you. It's, it's pretty crazy to watch at times.
That's fantastic. And it's a huge program to be a part of because, like any coaching, you feel great walking out afterwards. Like you get to have an impact on athletes. You get to know that you've made a change, hopefully for the better for them. But just one without notice, Jonty, crystal balling this thing in, say, 15 years' time, what would your dream be for what wheelchair basketball would look like in Victoria?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll still be playing, of course.
Naturally. So, you'll be a three- or four-time Paralympian by that stage, so
I'll,
no problem.
I'll have some young kid carrying my shoulders around for me. But no, 15 years time, I would love to have a national team with a few championships on few championship banners hanging around. I'd love to have a few gold medals for our junior program. I would honestly love to see wheelchair basketball televised. I think that, you know, if some of the sports that we get on TV and some of the things, I think wheelchair basketball definitely could be next. And you know, TV is a huge media outlet for people with disabilities. Like it's, you know, it's something. So yeah, I'd love to have, you know, a network where we have televised games every week for the National League, the opportunity to have, you know, a full state domestic league like your Big V. I think that's something that is definitely a possibility. That then, you know, just adds another framework into our pathway. So you've got your associations as beginners, then you've got your Big V, then your state, and then your National League. And it's just that smooth flowing pathway of the consistent athletes coming through. So a few more championships on the board, you know, the ability to have televised games and just a nice smooth pathway would be honestly incredible because I think there's definitely the opportunity there. It's just, we've started it and now we just need everybody else to sort of continue to help us build and grow to the point where the recruitment, the finding players, the publicity, it's not the problem anymore. It's our problem is, well, we've got so many players, like what are we going to do? You know, it's always better to have more than than less. So yeah, that would be awesome. And you know, we might have the next Dylan Alcott in our wheelchair basketball that's all over the TV for us and have sponsors, and yeah, it'd be crazy. So yeah,
that's the hope. I like it. Well, we can see if we can work towards that. It's this is one podcast, but it is one step on that. We'll probably make no impact on that. But
in 15 years' time, you'll see Rob saying, "See, this podcast was the catalyst wheelchair basketball success."
I'm more than happy to take credit for something I haven't done. No problems at all. There are enough of those people out there. Just add me to the pile. So big thanks for jumping in today, Jonty. Paralympics do kick off on Tuesday, I believe it is, next week. That will be all over the place.
Can I just say one thing really quickly? If there is anybody that's out there listening that can assist us in any way, whether it be help with chairs, help with practice, help with, you know, you've got contacts that can help us in terms of with that recruitment or anything like that, please, please, please reach out. You know, it is a collective effort, and we don't know what we don't know. So if anybody's got any contacts that can help us or the ability to, you know, help out with some athletes with chairs or whatever it might be, either shoot me an email, shoot Jonty an email, the information's on the BV website and how to get in touch with us, or Sheena, and we're happy to meet and chat and do whatever it takes. So yeah, just any help, please reach out.
Awesome, 100%. And yeah, the women kick off next Wednesday and the men kick off on Thursday.
Beautiful. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Jonty said we will win gold in both. Jonty, thanks for jumping in, mate. Really appreciate it. Coaches, stay safe, stay healthy. Good luck with everything going on at the moment. We are really hoping to get back on court fairly soon, but we obviously that's a little bit out of our control. We will catch everyone soon enough, hopefully. Thanks, guys.
Look, tune in and join the tribe on iTunes and Spotify.